Well, we have controlled it.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Call me Mr. Punctual, often. Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to Retirement Committee, order May 23rd at noon. Get back to the agenda. Can we have a roll call, please?
Roll call, Director Rowe?
Sure.
Director Mesqua? Director Bilodeau?
Present.
Director Young? Director Whitaker?
Here.
Director Meeks? Director Nguyen? Director Tran?
Here.
Director Sheldon? Director Green? Jason Dadakis?
Here.
Nishav Sharma? Kevin O'Toole?
Here.
Donna Suffrick? You do have a quorum.
Excellent. Is there a participation panel? Is there anybody here in the audience who wants to talk to the committee? And nothing? Okay. So, are there any items received today to the agenda?
Sure enough.
We're moving forward with consent calendar item number one. It's just the minutes of the last meeting. No motion?
I'll move approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Okay, then let's have a roll call vote.
Roll call, Director Rowe?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
My motion carries 5-0.
Okay, now we're up for matters for consideration, and it's item number two, major of the agenda, and it's fee levelization, which is something that we should be moving forward to, and I'm glad you're bringing this up this time. Stephanie?
Hey, thank you. So we have Scott Sutherland on Zoom and a presentation to be made by Scott. This is an item that we have a decision to make on today. It's one of the items that we said we bring back for the conversion to Fidelity that is going to happen in October. So I'm going to just turn it over to Scott so that he can start his presentation.
All right, great. Thanks, Stephanie. Thank you, everybody, for taking time today. So we want to go through all of this. I know some of you have heard this a few times before. We've been talking about fee levelization for 3 or 4 years and then quite a bit of late with the Retirement Advisory Committee. So we'll cover the basics, so make sure everybody understands what we're talking about. But let's go kind of back to the beginning, is that one of the important things we're trying to push forward for participants and to minimize liability for all of us in the committee is to keep fees for the plans as low as possible. So over the years, we've been able to negotiate different fee concessions with the vendors. We've cut our expenses several times as the plans have grown. And there's a lot of litigation out there where various law firms are going after bigger plans, feeling that their expenses are too high. And it's also kind of brought to the subject the idea of how fees are paid by each participant, which is what we're going to talk about today. So we've had 6 or 7 meetings, I think, so far in the last 5 or 6 years, where we've been able to lower the cost to participants by keeping funds that we were happy with, by moving to cheaper share classes. Some funds have 1 or 2 share classes, but you'll find it hard to believe some have 9 or 10. And those share classes may have the same strategies, the same managers, but their fee structures are different. And as a part of those fee structures or expense ratios, they may be sharing portions of those revenues with other vendors in the 401k, 401a, 457 plan business. We call that revenue sharing. So if you were to set up an account directly with a mutual fund company, say Janus has to send you statements, answer your phone calls, send you out tax documents. But if you buy Janus through Prudential, then Prudential is doing all that work for you. So that revenue of the expense ratio that is covering those expenses is then shared with the vendor. So if you look at different mutual funds, and of course, there's a lot of different fund families out there, not every one of them has the same revenue sharing, not everyone has the same expenses, and every one of them tends to have different approaches to how their different share classes share revenue. So when we go through these Zephyr reports that we've been doing for many years, we're showing you each time the expense ratio and then how much revenue sharing or portion of that expense ratio actually comes back to cover plan expenses. And at the moment, those plan expenses are covering Prudential's expense and our team's expense in terms of running the plan. So what we want to talk about is levelizing those fees so that each employee is paying the same percentage of that fee moving forward. In essence, what we'd like to do is make things more transparent by separating the investment expense. So making that something everybody can see, they can see it now, but knowing that you're only paying for the investment manager as part of your expense ratio. And then separating out the different fee, the administrative fees you're paying to Prudential today and Fidelity tomorrow, and to our team, so it's actually fully visible, fully transparent, but we also need to make those equitable. So let's kind of talk about the different ways you can set that up. So there's nothing here in terms of what we're talking today that's mandated by law. There's certainly a lot of legal opinions out there encouraging committees like ours to examine our fee structure and consider other options to try to make it equitable possible, but there's certainly no mandate from the Department of Labor. In fact, the Department of Labor has recently said they won't comment on it, but it's a lot of government programs where they don't give you guidance. They sort of give you enough rope to hang yourself with. So you do have to make sure you have a prudent process. The prudent process means we've looked carefully at all the options and we've determined what we think is best for our participants. There's no law that says you have to have it a particular way, but we do need to make sure we've examined all the different options and make sure that we feel as a committee that it is a fair option. So if you see my overview here on the screen, the left-hand side, participants pay the expense ratio of the mutual funds they select. So those vary a great deal. They go anywhere from 4 basis points, which is 4/100 of a percent, all the way up to a full percentage point. And then some or all of those mutual funds pay a portion of the expense ratio back to the plan. We push down expense ratios many different times in your plan. So there are a good number of funds that actually don't have any revenue sharing at all. But right now, what happens is that revenue sharing is captured by Prudential. It goes into an account. Then Prudential's fees are billed against that. Our fees are billed against that. And if there's any excess, and this is a result of our most recent contract with Prudential, if there's any excess revenue sharing, it's actually captured by the plan. And it's held in an expense bucket that Stephanie controls. And we've been using that to cover participant transaction fees. So if they were to take a withdrawal from the plan or a loan, rather than the participant paying that, the expense account has been paying that.
Hey, Scott, take a breath.
Sure.
I just want to know, any questions from participants in the meeting?
I have a quick question.
Please.
Chairman Rowe. So what we're getting at then is those fees are called what? What are those fees called?
That the mutual it could be a 12B1 fee. It could be a subtransfer asset fee.
Okay.
And both of those.
Is the sharing of that with Fidelity, if any, is that completely negotiable between us and them?
Well, each fund share class sets their fees by prospectus. So we couldn't individually as a client choose to negotiate that. We can negotiate with Fidelity as our record keeper as to what our overall fees are going to be. And we did that during the RFP process when we selected Fidelity. But if you wanted to go to a fund family and say, hey, we want this fund, we want it for a cheaper price, they would only give you the list of options to choose from that are available from that fund family.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Keep on going.
So if we were to switch to fee levelization, there's kind of three different ways that we could do that. So if we went to the first option there that says asset-based, then we could use a lineup of zero revenue sharing funds. In other words, all the funds we use have no revenue sharing. And then the expenses could be paid for Fidelity in the future and my team as a percentage of each participant's assets. That's pretty typical in the investment business. If you have a financial advisor you're working with, you're typically paying them a percentage of the assets that they're managing. The other route you could go would be a per head fee. So everybody per head, whether you're a brand new employee or you've been there 30 years, pays the same per head expense per year. And that per head fee covers the overall administrative costs for the plan. So the difference between those two, if you say had a bigger headcount of employees, a large number of employees, perhaps with smaller balances, then a per head fee is probably more cost efficient. In your case, where you have a smaller headcount and much larger balances, the average account balances being over 400,000 for your participants, then a percentage fee tends to make more sense. Now, the industry throws one wild card at us. I'll keep calling this the wild card, which is the efficient share classes, because if I tell you you're going to the lowest expense ratio fund, you figure you're getting the best deal. But some of the fund companies, not all of them, but some of them have set it up that if you use the zero revenue share version, which does have the lowest expense ratio, it's not the most fee efficient version if you use a different share class that refunded a portion of that revenue sharing back to plan participants. Now, this has become a big standard in the industry where a lot of vendors are doing this, because in essence, you're getting the lowest net fee into your participants' hands, which is what we want to do. So they, if there was any revenue sharing in a fund they chose, we actually give that money back to them. And then their account is billed either the percentage or the per head fee for the administration. So they're not harmed by picking a fund with revenue sharing. If it's the most fee efficient we provide to them, they get that money back. So if one person picked a more expensive fund because that fits their goal, and a portion of that expense was revenue sharing, they would get that money back. Not all the expense, because you're still paying the manager, but the portion that is revenue sharing. So questions on that so far? So I have a few quotes here from Fred Reisch, who's thought to be kind of the preeminent ERISA attorney. And I'm actually at a conference here in Scottsdale today for 401k plan advisors, and Fred is here. I couldn't get him to come onto the Zoom, but he's here at the meeting. But he does talk a lot about rebating revenue sharing back to participants. So Dennis talked about it could be a 12B1 fee, it could be a subtransfer asset fee. But the idea here is he's put together some quotes in terms of advising plan sponsors about how you do this. So it should be equitable, it should be fair. So there's nothing wrong with having revenue sharing as long as you have a policy as to how you're going to approach that. And then they recommend that it be equitable and fair, in essence, that the people that get the revenue sharing are the people that are paying the revenue sharing. Because the issue we have now, which is an issue a lot of plans have now, and we fear is going to be the result of future litigation, is that some participants are paying more and some participants are paying less, either as a percentage or a per head fee, because of the investments they've chosen. So from a legal perspective, we feel like the safest, most transparent, and fair way to do it is for everybody to pay the same percentage. So it doesn't impact what investments you chose. It just impacts your balance in the plan or your participation in the plan. So the idea here is to kind of cover ourselves, but also be fair to participants. Let them pick the investments that meet their particular goals. And then if they do pick investments that, because of the fund family quirks or because of the style of investment they've picked, that it is something that is fair to them. So the question is, why are we doing this? Well, we talked about the litigation, but we are seeing the industry change this. So we put together a couple of different surveys. Deloitte has a survey they do every few years about defined contribution plans. Vanguard has a survey as well. I'll show you some Fidelity numbers in a moment. But how are the administrative fees paid? And again, this is not a wholesale change at once, but one by one, you're seeing more and more funds change this. So at the top would be the traditional revenue share relationship. So this is a question Deloitte asked their clients about this. So in 2015, there was 50% of the plans had this revenue share approach. 2017, it was down to 39, 2019 down to 33. And then was it a direct fee charged by the record keeper? So that's going from 41 to 53 to 52. And it was a percentage of plan assets. You can see that's gone from 9 to 15% over that time frame. So these numbers probably need to be a little bit more updated, but you can certainly see the trends that are happening there. This is from Deloitte's survey. And then how are administrative fees paid? So is it pro rata based on the account balance? Is it a flat dollar amount? You can see it's about equal in 2019, where 29% were doing it on a pro rata basis and 28% were doing it on a flat dollar amount. There are some plans where the expenses for a retirement planner are paid completely by the company, but that would be an issue for the board to decide if they were going to cover those expenses. At the moment, this is completely a participant paid benefit. So these are Fidelity's numbers from a few years ago. And so there's two different markets. They call their mid-market 100 million and down to 25 million, and their large market's 100 million up to 1 billion. So we're somewhere in that $180 million range. So at the top there, you see percentage of plans that are bundled or in revenue share, the percentage that are fixed basis points, which be a percentage on plan assets or participant assets, and then a fixed dollar amount. So in the mid-market, you know, 100 million less, you can see that revenue share number is going down. So from 69% to 61% to 54%. The basis points is changing, again, making that fee transparent, making it equitable. It's gone from 29% to 43%. And then for those smaller plans, you can see there are a few plans that have gone to a fixed per head fee, but not really as many. If you go to larger plans, you can still see that steady progression of revenue sharing going from 46% to 32%. But the basis points is kind of a different situation there because you might have larger employers with 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 employees where it kind of makes more sense to do it on a per head basis. So the Retirement Advisory Committee, we spent a lot of time kind of looking at different numbers, and we felt like the most equitable way at Orange County Water would be to use some sort of fixed basis point approach. So let's pause there and see if we have any questions before we cover a little bit more about how this might work.
We have 20 seconds to think about this.
Okay, so just issues. I'm sorry, Director, do you have anything for me?
Nope, no questions, apparently.
No hands raised.
Thank you for that. So just kind of things to consider once again. So under revenue sharing, the participants pay an all-in-one fee. The expense ratio covers both the investment manager and the plan administration. So investors in managed funds are paying all plan administration expenses, and investors in passively managed or index funds with no revenue sharing are not paying any plan expenses. If you switch to fee levelization, all fees are transparent. Transparency is always good. Participants will see the ongoing plan administration fee on each statement. Every participant pays the same percentage fee, and participants with smaller balances will pay the same percentage, but a lower dollar amount than participants with larger balances. So we do feel like, advisory committee feels like there's an education process here. And as we're moving to Fidelity, we're gonna be doing a lot of meetings to help coach people on how the process will work, the new website, the new resources that we're gonna have from Fidelity. So we were thinking that we would make this change part of that as we move to Fidelity, take a different approach in terms of fee levelization moving forward. So if you did fee levelization with a per head fee, all fees are transparent. The participants see the fees on their statements and on their website, but every participant pays a per head fee, but participants with smaller balances would pay the same per head fee as a participant with a larger balance. So as we explored this, we are concerned about a newer employee seeing a bigger per head fee than say an employer that had employee that had been there for 20 or 30 years and had much more need for the resources that the plan provides. So the last option, of course, is on the fee levelization with the most efficient share classes. So all fees and refunds are transparent. The employees that select the funds of revenue share will have that refunded back to their account. So it's fair and equitable. Participants will see an ongoing administration fee. So some people may see money coming back and they'll see money going back out. In some cases, they may actually get more refunded than their charge. Some cases, they may see just the fee that's coming in for the administration because they don't have any revenue share coming back. But in this case, ultimately, people get what they pay for.
Just one quick question on this. Scott, this is Jason. Can you just confirm that last option, the most efficient share class option, that can be applied to either an asset-based fee levelization or a per-head fee levelization approach?
That is correct. So you can choose kind of, it's two different choices. How do you want to charge your fee per head or as a percentage? And do you want to refund revenue or not refund revenue?
Okay. So kind of like the last column is sort of a variation on option two and option three, if you will.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, Jason. So in essence, what we can decide on option two and option three is we want to be completely zero revenue sharing, which I think probably 5 or 8 years from now we will be. But the industry, the mutual fund industry, needs to keep up with that, and they need to offer more competitive zero revenue share versions. But since they don't now, we can use the most fee efficient bridge so we can make sure everyone's treated equitably now. So thank you for clarifying that.
Thanks.
So I just put a few quotes in here from court judgments on fee litigation. So there's actually was even a recent lawsuit, two or three of them actually, where they sued retirement plans because their investment policy statement said we only pick the lowest cost expense ratios of the funds. And of course, the courts have shown that you need to have a prudent process that says that expenses are part of your decision process, your manager tenure, performance, the quality of the team, the risk controls, all of that has to go into the process. So here's three major different lawsuits about that. But so they say that fees are part of the equation, but they're not the only thing to consider. So here's the thing about efficient share classes. Actually, I mean, let me use, so if you look at these, this is a fund that happens to be in one of our plans. And you notice there's four different share classes. Now on number four, apologize, that large growth I should be large growth Z, the symbol's different. So this just makes no sense whatsoever. So the A share is the typical retail share you might buy if you bought from an advisor 10, 20 years ago. The expense ratio is 89 basis points, but they share 50 of that back if you had it in your retirement plan. So the net cost would be 39 basis points. So if a participant picked that fund, 89 would be what they're paying, but they get 50 of that back. Now, if they pick the advisor shares or ADV shares, you can see it would only be 64. They get 25 back. So now it's still 39, no big deal. If we were picking between these two, we'd probably pick the advisor share class. But if you pick the iShare, which is the institutional share class, used to be the cheapest, so no longer the case, the fee actually goes from 64 to 63, didn't pick up much, but now they're only revenue sharing back 15 basis points instead of 25. So your fee is actually more. So this is kind of how the mutual fund industry is trying to trip up retirement plans. We're trying to drive down costs and they're giving you lower cost investments with less revenue sharing. So now this fund actually has a Z share class. So forgive the I that's on number four, where that actually has 55 basis points of expense ratio, but has no revenue sharing. So you might say, well, good job, we got the zero revenue sharing option, but it's actually more expensive than if we use the A or the ADV and refunded the fee back, which is why I'm bringing up the subject of where in some cases, not all, but probably about 20% of your funds, it makes more sense to pick the most efficient share class, not the cheapest share class. So it's cheapest net, but not cheapest in their first expense ratio. So take a minute for everybody to absorb that. Any questions about that? So if we do want to move forward with this, the implementation process is here. So for keeping revenue sharing, we actually don't need to change anything in terms of our investments. If we were going to go asset-based with zero revenue sharing, we'd have to move several of the fund share classes down to zero revenue versions. That's for two and three. And if we were going to use the most fee efficient on the far right, then we would look at each fund and determine what the most fee efficient version of that is. So we've done the homework on that. We can show it to you today. We can leave it for another day, but that's our presentation in terms of fee levelization. So let me open that up to questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have a comment.
Go ahead, Dr. Bilodeau.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, we want to go with the lowest net fee options available for our participants. So whatever we should be doing to get us in that direction, I think makes the most sense. That's all. Thank you.
So I'm thinking along the same lines.
If I could step back one slide, Scott.
Yes, sir.
So I'm still digesting this a little bit, making sure I understand this, because you alluded to earlier, this is a little confusing. So in this case, if we were to go with the most efficient share class, I think I'm wrong on this, but it would appear to me to be a tie between first two options there, the net expense ratio of 0.39. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is correct. And actually, with a few of your other funds, if we looked at them today, there's some ties. So that's where we'd have to make a decision, seeming that we'd probably want to pick number two because there's a tie, but overall, we're giving them a lower verge cost base value expense ratio than the one that's number one.
Okay. Just want to confirm that I was interpreting that correctly.
Yep. Great question.
Scott, in a fee levelization plan where you're having the administrative costs deducted and any revenue share credited, I presume that shows up on like your quarterly statement. What specific, if you have a whole portfolio of multiple investments, how is it determined which buckets your expenses come out of and your revenue share credit goes back into it? Is it done proportionally to your investments, or how does that math, how does that true up work?
Yeah, great question. So let's just look at the fee itself. So if we're taking a percentage fee out of somebody's account, they're going to do it pro rata. So if they have five different investments and one's 30% of their account, one's 5% of their account, then 30% of that fee is going to come out of that 30% holding, 5% of their fee is going to come out of that 5% holding. But if there are of those five investments, say two that pay revenue sharing back to you and three that don't, there would be two separate transactions on your quarterly statement for those two funds to refund the revenue sharing to you, but there would be no transaction at all for the three funds that do not refund revenue sharing. So you'd see a credit for the revenue sharing for those two funds, and then you'd see a debit that shows up as a fixed total. You'll see one quarterly fee, but if you looked at where they took it from, you would see those proportions, the 30%, the 5%, et cetera, and so on, going through the funds that you own.
And so just a follow-up, Scott, if you're in a share that a fund that offers revenue sharing and you're having money credited back to you, the credit back goes to your holding in that specific fund?
That's right.
Okay.
So you'd end up with more, as in essence, of that same fund. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think that just, it kind of speaks to the, if we move forward, it's just the employee education part of this, just knowing where these different, you know, debits and credits, if you will, are going to coming and going from, so that it's intelligible to folks.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We just did this with a very large plan in February of 2022. And so there was a definite education curve. And so some people would notice the fees being refunded and actually thought it was an expense. So I would have to show them that no, you actually got $800 of credit from revenue sharing. But they saw a fee, they just assumed it was a negative. It was a positive in some cases.
As you alluded to, this, you know, this issue been discussed with the Employee Advisory Committee. We've weighed some of these options, and I think we've landed on the asset-based approach being the most kind of straightforward and equitable, and I guess familiar, because we're all used to paying an asset-based fee on the mutual funds themselves, that expense ratio. Everyone's used to that type of approach. And so extending that to the record keeping and your advisory fees seems pretty consistent and straightforward. So I think our, you know, from staff's perspective, that's something we'd be interested in. So, Chair Rowe, if it would be helpful, I know there's some implementation discussion maybe we could have after this, but I'm happy to maybe just to get it, have the committee consider a motion to move forward with an asset-based de-levelization approach that uses the most efficient fair share class.
Yeah, it seems to make sense.
Yeah. I'm happy to make that motion. Maybe have the committee consider that, and then we can talk about the implementation details. So I'll move to that.
I will second that
motion. Okay, second. Further discussion? No, nobody?
I think that's it's a good move myself. Looking at this, my perspective is that we've had, I call it like a lump of fees for everything. And now we're getting to splitting it up and showing where it, you know, money's coming from. that should be equitable to people who are taking a risk. And those who aren't, you know, they should know it's what you're getting if you don't take a risk. It's going to make it more transparent. Delocalization transparent, more details in the information about what we're doing here. That's a good thing. All right. Any other discussion? I'd like to take a roll call.
Roll call, Director Rounds.
I'm sorry, just one. There was a comment meter. Are just being assessed on a per person basis or on the valuation percentage of all the funds? I know, I think that was discussed early and I. Was that determined, or is that being decision being made today?
Scott, you want to elaborate on that?
He explained the difference.
Yeah.
I'm asking the committee how they're voting.
Yeah, the motion on the floor is for an asset based.
So it's a percentage. Yes,
percentage.
I thought it was said that if you have less employees and more money, you want to go per individual. He actually said it the other way, but I think what he meant was that if you have a lot of individuals with a little bit of money, you want to go on a money basis. But if you have few individuals, each with 400,000 average lots of money, you might want to go on the individual basis. That's why it was a little unclear.
Sean, I think on the basis of the previous stage, I feel like we're kind of in the middle of that population, maybe on the lower side, but
yeah,
kind of in the middle.
So you just my question. So you guys have looked at all that and you've come to that decision.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Because this is more consistent with where we've been and more understandable.
Those are factors as well.
Yes. All right. I had a roll call. Any other discussion? Sorry. That's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Roll call, Director Rowe.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Jason Dadakis.
Aye.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Chair Rowe, Jason. I'm Scott or Stephanie. Do you want to kind of keep talking a little bit about how this might be affected and some of the timelines involved and whether a further action from the committee is desirable? Okay.
That's true.
Yeah, Scott, are you still there, Scott?
I'm here.
Okay, good. I know in the slides after this, you know, there's some discussion about, we have some discussion about the fund share classes. Maybe we could just talk about what we need to do, you know, timing and, you know, the next steps on those.
Yeah, so we have a conversion to Fidelity occurring on October 1st, but all the work's done before that. October 1st is the date that money actually moves from Prudential/Empower, their parent company, over to Fidelity. So all the work will be done June, July, August, September to prepare for that. So Fidelity needs our final list of funds by the first week of July, which is why we're having this discussion today. So our thought process had been, there are in some cases with some of the funds, we'd need to make share class changes to accomplish the goal of the lowest net fee that Dennis and Kelly mentioned. So the idea would be is that we can make decisions today that then we would give that list to Fidelity. So when the plan is moving, some fund share classes would be identical and some would change as part of the conversion. But as we're converting everything else, moving money, moving logins, we convert to fee levelization as a portion of that. So if we all agree that doing it during the conversion makes the most sense, then what we can decide on the rest of today's meeting is which funds we would change and which funds we would keep the same to implement that process. And then my team would provide the mapping to Fidelity, which is what funds you have money in right now and what funds will have money in on October 1st.
I'd recommend the committee make this attempt to go through this today.
You want to go through it?
I think it can be concise. You know, it looks like it's a lot of the ones that's kind of decided for us. There's sort of only one option that optimizes this. There's only a handful of choices that they've got can walk us through. And then if the committee has any other challenges about this sort of question about this sort of remapping Fidelity, we can just kind of pose that as we go through to make sure that we're not missing anything. I'd be comfortable going through this just to get this done so we can see how the implementation timeline.
We got a month to go. I'm happy with doing that. Any other disagreements? That's good. I'm going to take a break to go ahead.
Okay, thank you for that, everybody. So I'm going to start with the money purchase 401a plan. The first section is going to be the easiest. This list of funds here are all funds that we have currently. They are the lowest share cost share class that exists of this fund. They're also zero revenue. So in this case, there would be no action that needs to be taken. We're happy with these funds. We hope all the funds look like this in the future, where there's zero revenue share and the lowest cost share class. So my first recommendation to the committee 1 through 17 would be just to keep this list of funds as is.
18. There's one more on the next page.
Oh yeah, thank you. Got to work on our editing. So
is that a?
This is actually 18 is actually a change on the next page. We got to talk about
that. It's a positive leverage fund.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so these are ones where you're going to be exactly the same. And actually what's going to happen is Fidelity is going to pick up these shares at Prudential and move them over. They're never going to do any trades. It won't be buys or sells. They're literally going to re-register them at Fidelity. So,
I'm fine with keeping the first 17 entities based on Scott's recommendation. Maybe, as we've done this before, if the board secretary could just contract these maybe one fell swoop motion at the end.
That's fine. Okay. The piece that you keep track of an industry of access.
So
thank you for that. And Anif from my team is going to hopefully keep us on track too. So I've changed to page 13. So if you look here, well, it's number 12, but pardon me, 13 in the PDF. So this principal bond market index fund that we utilize now is not actually available on the Fidelity platform. They just don't have a fee agreement, a fund agreement with that. So there are index funds that are pretty similar. They all follow the same benchmark. So we have two choices to pick from here. This would actually be a fund change, but the concept would be the same as we're still using an index fund. So there's Fidelity's US Bond Index, Vanguard's Total Bond Market Index. Some of you may be familiar with these funds. So right now we have Principal's Bond Market Index, which charges 16 basis points, but we have the option to go to Fidelity, which charges 2.5. Or Vanguard that charges 5. Now, Principal does refund 10 of those basis points, so they're essence and fixed, but here we could cut the fee slightly by 1 basis point or cut it in half if we went to the Fidelity option. So we don't have a choice to keep Principal. The question is which of the two we'd want to hire. And again, they're an index fund, so the performance is virtually identical other than the fees.
Scott, it seemed like, yeah, we just make it based on the expense ratio that the Fidelity option stands out. Just a question. I know you know later on here for some of the options that I think I think we're good, but that's a separate question. We'll get to it.
So we titled this as positive leverage because employees would get a net better deal with this change. So there'd be no revenue sharing, so that simplifies things, but they'd actually net get a better deal. So the next batch, 19, 20, 21, and 22, are where we would take the current fund and we could switch to the zero revenue share version and it would be a net neutral. Now, if you do the math on arithmetic on a few of these, you notice it might be off by 1 basis point, but pretty darn close. So our thought process, you could take the Neuberger Berman Institutional and go to the R6, the JP Morgan R5, go to R6, Hartford R5 to R6, and American Bond Fund of America from R5E to R6. And you're just netting it out, you're simplifying it. There's no revenue share going back and forth. But now we don't need that revenue sharing to pay administrative costs because it is being paid by a percentage fee that everyone would pay. So we felt like you could make these changes. You could go from the fund in the white stripe to the fund in the blue stripe, and net net we'd all be the same, but they'd have a net lower cost.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
But people could say blue, but it looks great to me.
Remove the white, fine. Add the gray.
The non-white, we'll call it that. Yeah. So another quirk to this is that Fidelity, as a record keeper, the biggest in the business, does not allow you to use Fidelity advisor funds, which are typically advisor sold funds, which is what Empower and Prudential use on their platform, but we can use Fidelity direct funds. So on fund number 23, we could switch from the Fidelity Advisor Global Commodity Stock Fund to the Fidelity Global Commodity Stock Fund, which has the same manager, the same strategy, roughly the same performance, but it tends to differ by one important part is that it's sold from a different side of the house from Fidelity, and it's actually a little bit more fee efficient. So they threw us off during the RFP process saying that we couldn't stay with Fidelity funds. You just can't stay with Fidelity Advisor funds. You can use Fidelity Direct funds. So in this case, you go from a fund that charges 92 and refunds 25 to one that charges 94 and refunds 35. So we'd actually go from a net 67 to a net 59. In this case, you would have revenue sharing coming back to participants.
We'll have an option to keep the advisor fund.
Right, this, Scott, this seems like the only way to keep this general fund in the plan, right?
Yeah, we don't have a choice. We could either do a complete new search and find something else, or we could make this change.
I'd say we stick with it. Okay. Yeah. Make the change.
Okay, thanks everybody. These are not easy, so I appreciate everyone's help on this. So then this is where it gets tricky. So this is where we call it negative leverage. And this is where the most fee efficient share class is not the lowest net expense ratio. So what we may consider is just keeping the fund that we have now. So let's give you an example. Fund number 24, Invesco Gold and Special Minerals, used to be called Oppenheimer Gold and Special Minerals. Right now it charges 81 basis points and refunds 25 back to pay plan expenses. If you went to the R6, which yes, does lower the expense ratio from 81 to 65, you lose all of the revenue sharing, your R0 revenue share, but you go from 56 basis points net to 65. So you're increasing it by 9 basis points. So this is gonna be a similar theme as I go through all of these. Some of these are almost a laugh out loud funny because the revenue sharing doesn't really make much sense when you change the expense ratio. This one's at least has a little bit of logic, but I'll go through them one by one. But my thought would be not to change this, to keep the Y share that we have now, because if we refund the 25 back to people, they're ahead of the game.
That makes sense too. Oh, Scott, repeating pattern here is R6. What does R6 mean?
R6 has become kind of the standard of a zero revenue share version of it. So R stands for retirement. One's typically the most expensive. Six tends to be the least expensive in the zero revenue share option. So not every fund family has adapted that, but many have. So.
Okay, thank you.
So fund 25, Columbia Seligman, not a huge difference, but you go from 90 refunding 10 net 80 to an 85. We recommend just staying with the I2, which you would net at 80 basis points.
Okay.
Fund 26, MFS International Intrinsic Value, you go from 72 refunding 15 to 61. So your net going from 57 to 61. That's pretty close, but we'd still recommend we stay with the R4s for now until MFS comes up with a better way of charging their expense. Fund 27, BlackRock, I don't know what they're doing here, but if you go from where we are now with the institutional, we pay 50, the refund 25, net 25. If you went to the K, which is for 401k plans, it actually goes only down to 45. So we'd recommend you stay with the institutional class there, your net 25 there. And then fund 28, I find amusing. You can go from the I2, which charges 20, refunds 10, to the I3, which charges 20 and refunds nothing.
So guys,
we would stay with the I2.
Yep.
So then Victory, small company I, 89 refunding 10 or 85 refunding nothing. We would just stay with the institutional or the I share class on fund 29. And then fund 30, principal mid cap is 23 refunding 10 net 13, or you can switch to the R6, which is net 16. So subtle difference there, but still I would stay with what we have.
Okay.
Another Victory fund charges 58, refunds 10, net 48, or you can go to 54. So we would recommend staying with the iShares on Fund 31. The long-term holding Fidelity low price stock, that is a Fidelity direct fund we've had for more than 25 years. That the share class we have charges 82, refunds 35. You could go to the R6 version you just asked about, Director Rowe, which will only charge 50. But if you kept the one we have now, it's net 47. That's pretty close. So some people might say, let's go to the R6 anyway. I think that's kind of pretty close. So I'd probably keep the one we have.
It's showing that the net of the R6 is only 36 basis points.
Yeah, so that's we corrected that this morning. I'm sorry, Jason. So it's on the screen different than the printout you got last week. So
it's really tough.
Yeah. Our mistake on that part.
Yes, it's 50. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. That's correct on the screen, not correct in your hand. So apologize.
Yeah,
could I ask the screen be made larger?
Yeah, can you enlarge this little, Scott? Yeah, zoom in.
Oh, even more, like three times.
You want to just look at one fund at a time?
Well, if I have to.
How's that?
I'd say double that. Keep going.
See, like hit 200 or like 20.
Yeah. Oh, that's better.
That's good. Okay. So this is 30. Okay, I see it now. Can maybe highlight the 50 basis point under item 32.
Yeah.
You could use your pointer and wave around.
Okay. We're waving around this 50 right here. So.
Right. So, okay. So that's different than what's in our packet. So it makes sense to stick with. Stick with it. Okay.
To confirm what we currently have is the most efficient.
Yeah, and it's close, but it is the most efficient. So that's the kind of thing we'd revisit, you know, every quarter just to see our team would look at it. And if we noticed that it was made more sense to change, we'd make the committee aware of that. So, okay, Fund 33, Putnam Large Cap.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Well, it's a general one. I joined the meeting about 4 minutes after 12, so I may have missed this. I apologize. There was a discussion of the performance of all these funds. I think, like I said, it's focused on all the costs. There was a discussion on their performance in earlier.
Yeah, there was set apart from this meeting every quarter. Sky has a review performance, right. And funds come in, funds come out based on performance. And so this is the lineup we have now based on performance. As we transfer that lineup to Fidelity, this is just making sure we're the most efficient options as we bring that same lineup to Fidelity.
Well, within that lineup,
yes.
We felt that Fidelity was higher performance.
Yes. Yes. The committee and the board, I think, approved the bid of Fidelity last
because they were because they were higher performance.
For the record keeper.
Yeah,
but I do the RFP process.
They're more forthcoming. Good reputation. They're more forthcoming than
do any of these funds have any restrictions on what they invest in?
There are some. We can go over that in a future meeting, but yeah, there are some restrictions on some.
You don't want to go over it now?
Well, it's a long list. I don't know how much.
No, I know. I know. That's
have
okay.
There,
so. That's a. Thank you. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay, moving forward, we're on 33.
Yep. Yes, sir. So we own the Y of the Putnam Large Cap. 64 pays 20 or 55 pays nothing. So we'd recommend staying with the Y to net 44.
Okay.
And the Goldman Inflation Protected Securities Institutional pays 34 or charges 34, pays 12. So net 22, if you went to the R6, which makes no sense to me, you get nothing back. So it would be 33. So in this case, sort of like the ones that were already zero revenue share of the lowest cost, we're actually keeping all of the ones on this page. Everybody okay with that? And then at the bottom of the page, we have in the default funds for our 401(a) money purchase plan are the American Funds target date funds, but time quickly passes us by. The longest term vintage we have is the 2050, But if you believe it or not, folks, there are people that will retire in 2060 or later. So we would recommend that the 2060 fund be added to the current lineup, which is 2010 through 2050.
That makes sense.
Good time.
I imagine it makes sense.
And we can refer back to the last April meeting where those American funds over the last 3, 5, and 10 years have been the top performing target date fund families. All right, we made it through an entire plan. Any questions for me on any of these?
Here, I just have one question for Scott. Scott, just moving forward, given these change in expense ratios and ones of leverage, just the complexity here, can you maybe just tell us, how does your team ensure that when you come back to us for the performance review meetings and show us the separate charts, that those are using the right expense ratio? It would seem that you would need to take into account the revenue share chunk of that for a participant to truly know how the performance has been net of all expenses, not just what's going to the fund manager. Is there a way you, how can you, in the future, make sure that that's the information the committee is getting?
Yeah, so we get a lineup every time before we start a meeting. Ani, who's on this call, works for me, will reach out to the vendor that's the current vendor on the plan and get the entire lineup of every fund that's available and every share class that's available in the plan. So, and I'll let her speak if you'd like, but then what she does is go look at the funds that are in our plan and look at the other share classes, because that giant spreadsheet has the revenue share on there for every fund and looks to see that those, what we have now, is still the most fee efficient version. Now, some of them, like the ones on your page here, we already have the lowest cost version and the zero revenue share version, but we're going to look at them each quarter to make sure we still have the right ones. Is there something else? Was there a new share class created? Was there a change in fee structure under the fund's prospectus? And then when we put them on the Zephyr reports, you remember we show you the revenue share and the expense ratio. If Ani were to identify a fund where we could make an improvement cost-wise, then we would bring that to the committee's attention that quarter.
Yeah, I guess my question is both for the committee and participants. I think for the committee to assess the true performance of the fund, yes, we look at the total expense ratio and we look at the revenue share, but literally like where the Zephyr dot plots on the line.
I see, right? What you're saying. Yeah, I think what we'd have to do, that's a great point, Jason. So I think what we'd have to do is see if we could somehow override what the fee is, but I worry about crossing into the territory where the SEC would have an issue with us going with a different net performance than is an audited number. But we can certainly make note or put an asterisk to say some portion of that is refunded so that we'd be aware of it. So let me figure that out in the next few months, what we can do with the bounds of the regulations. But certainly at the very least, we can identify that as the case where there's refunds coming back.
Okay. And for just the flip side of that, for participants on their statements, they will still see deductions from the fund itself at the fully loaded expense ratio, if you will, but then they'll see the credit back for the revenue share.
That's right. But when they look at expenses that are the performance of the funds, which are audited numbers, they're looking at the SEC audited number, which does not include the money that they've been refunded.
Okay. All right. Yeah, if you could, the committee's benefit, I think, just how we're going to handle that going forward, and just we understand whether it's explicitly in the information we'll be showing or it's just something we need to, you know, almost consider alongside, I think would be helpful. Because for some of these funds, the revenue share is a significant portion of the net expenses.
Yeah, I think the last 4 or 5 years we've been using the net revenue share coming back as kind of a tiebreaker for some of these funds. So I think that would continue to be the case.
Okay, thank you.
So 457 deferred comp, we'll start with the easy ones first. 1 through 11 here are all funds that were both the zero revenue share and the lowest cost version of the fund that exists currently. So our recommendation 1 through 11 would be to keep these as they are.
Works for me.
Now, fund number 12, there is no longer the ability to keep Philly Advisor small cap growth, but we can keep Fidelity small cap growth. In this case, you would see a net positive in terms of cost. So 104 refunding 25 to 79 or move to the Fidelity Direct Small Cap Growth Institutional, which would net 60. So in this case, it would be a new symbol, a new share class, but the same manager, same strategy at a lower cost. So here I'm recommending a change to the committee.
Makes sense.
All cap.
Yep. Is it big enough, everybody, screen-wise?
Sounds good.
Yes.
So fund 13, 14, 15, 16. Here we could switch share classes to a lower cost version that would be zero revenue share, and it would be net neutral in terms of the expense ratio benefit to participants. In some cases, there's a 1 basis point difference, but we'd recommend changing these. So the Franklin Small Cap Advisor would go to R6, Janus Henderson Enterprise Institutional would go to the N shares, Hartford Dividend Growth R5 would go to R6, and Janus Henderson Balanced Institutional would go to the N shares. And you can see the 10 basis points, or in one fund's case, 15 basis point revenue share would go away, but we would now own the lowest share cost version and zero revenue version of that fund.
I'm sorry, Scott, are you proposing to change all these?
I would change all of these. So White Stripe fund, the first listing as our current holding, would go to the fund below, the share class below it in blue or in gray, depending on how it appears on your screens.
Yep.
So these would be 4 fund changes. There would be removes and adds for these 4 that Fidelity would process.
Question number 13, how is the math favorable for us if we change?
It was 58 and 59, so it's pretty close.
Okay.
So you can certainly keep the advisor, but we were just thinking, well, it's 1 basis point difference. Let's take the lower overall number, but you certainly could say that also about fund 16 if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, I would say if we're trying to make a choice, why would we just make the lowest cost choice right now?
You can.
But yeah, so I would recommend keeping 13 and 16 as is. Changing 14, 15.
I'm agreeable with that. Yeah.
Okay, so 13 stays as it is, 14 changes from I to N, 15 changes from R5 to R6, and then 16 stays where it is.
And the revenue share, it varies during the year, or how does that work?
It's refunded every quarter. So when the payments come in from the fund companies, Fidelity gives it back to the participants.
Yeah, so they could, what they do is they figure that out and the quarterly dividend.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen right at the end of the quarter. It happens just when the payments come in. So it typically happens the first month of every calendar quarter. So. Okay, so then current investments moving to left revenue sharing. So on your packets, the number for the Y shares was incorrect. The expense ratio is 93 basis points, which is on your screen. This refund's 15 currently. If you went to the I shares, it would go to 87, refunding 7. So if we wanted to keep, it's net 78 for the current fund, it's net 80 for the lower cost version. So we have it neutral, but if we want to stay consistent with 13 and 16, we'd actually keep the Y shares.
That makes sense.
I'd say we keep it.
Okay.
If I could actually circle back momentarily, 401A, to be consistent with what we're currently doing at the lowest cost share one, on number 20.
Yep. Kevin's right. So there's a few here that were 1 basis point difference.
Okay.
You can see 79 versus 70. So we could stick with the R5 if that's what we wanted to do.
I believe that was the only one in the 401A that was in that tight margin. Where we change track or people
currently. I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, we'll keep that one.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, so glad you brought it up, Kevin. That's good. All right, so that's four back to 457. So I don't know if we officially decided here on the touchdown, but the touchdown sounds like we're just keeping the Y share.
Yes.
Nets out. Okay. All right, so page 18 of your slides. So here we have 18 through 24. Let me come back to 18 and 19. Actually, let's do 19 through 24 first, because this is a similar situation where it's Fidelity Advisor going to Fidelity Direct. And the Fidelity Direct share classes, there's an asterisk on the advisor because we literally can't keep those if we're moving to Fidelity. But you can go to the Direct share class version, which has the same manager, same strategy, and is roughly 10 plus basis points more efficient to make those changes. So this would be 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, and 24.
Yeah, going down to 20. Seems to make sense to me. So those changes, they're either neutral or in our favor.
Yeah, and these asset manager fees would be pretty efficient, where they'd be the one that's 85% stocks is net 34, and the one that's 80% bonds is net 21. So pretty good cost.
And Scott, given we can't go to advisor funds, this is our only really way to keep these funds in the plan.
Yep, only option. Okay. But it is productive in terms of netting out lower costs, so it's a double win there. Okay, then Virtus Duff & Phelps Water Fund is charging 93 under the current fund we have. Would go net out 83 with what we have now. You can go to the A share, which net is cheaper, but unfortunately now you're taking a fund that has a headline fee of 122 versus one with a headline fee of 93. Now, if we're just going to say cheaper is cheaper, then you want the A share, which was netting out at 72. So that one was a little bit more confusing. So,
I mean, to me, a 21 basis point savings is a 21 basis point savings. I think we just, the committee and Scott for your education, just need to make folks know that that's what the real deal on this fund is.
Okay.
My thought, yeah.
So in this case, that would be a change. So 18 through 24 would all change to the funds in blue, if we're all in agreement with that.
It's about those costs. I have no problem with this.
Sorry, I'm in a hotel room and they're trying to kick me out. So if you see me dragged away, you'll know what happened. All right, so page 19 of your slides is our last section here. Funds 25 through 33, it would actually cost us money to go to the lower expense ratio fund. So we call that negative leverage. So in this case, we're recommending that we actually stay with our current funds. And I'm happy to go through them one by one if you'd like. But
it's pretty evident. As long as you didn't update anything on your screen today, Scott, please.
No, we would just, so this would be existing funds that would pick up and transfer as is, and then in the future, employees would be getting their revenue sharing back. So.
And Scott, all of these changes will occur when we move over to Fidelity in October.
Yeah, and that's a good, I asked Cy at Empower if we could make these changes beforehand. We could. If you wanted to, we could submit those. They would happen in August or September, but I felt like it's probably better just to do it all at once and not to have two different rounds of significant fund changes, you know, a couple of months apart.
And do it all at one time.
Do it all at one time when we transfer the fund. So.
Just one question before we act on this. What happens if between now and then the committee decides to red flag or remove a fund that is currently red flag? How does that happen in this sort of transition period, if you will?
Well, if we red flag it, it's not taking any action, but it would be in the minutes, and that would still be a valuable process. But in essence, for the July, the normal meeting that we would have where we review all of the investments, we would be locked into prevented from making any changes until the plan arrived at Fidelity, and then we could go back. So those would be delayed until we'd be able to do that. So in essence, we'd be blacked out because we have to give them the final lineup by the first week of July. So we could have it queued up so when the plan moves over that Fidelity can start the process, but there would be a couple of month delay there.
Okay, don't make a decision about increasing the federal debt.
Yeah. No, I just think we'd want to just be, whenever we come back and do the review, just be clear with the committee and that as clear as we can with participants that there's, this sounds like it's almost pseudo lock, during that period. And people want to need to take other measures, what's available to them.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, but I still think we want to have the due diligence on file. We still want to be aware of any issues if there are some, and then have a plan to take action even if we can't take action right away.
Sure. I agree.
Okay, that concludes my presentation. Thank you for the patience taking us through a very difficult subject here. So appreciate everyone's help here today.
I'm glad we went through it. Got it done.
Sarah, do you want to have the or secretary just reach back maybe like the groupings, not one by one, but I think largely we do the same thing within each grouping for those handful of exceptions, just to make sure.
And I'll interject this for a second, is that Anithami from my office, Christina, she'll connect with you and Stephanie just to make sure we all have the same answers before we put it, memorialize them in the minutes. So.
Okay, well, the meeting is being recorded.
Perfect.
Either Ani or tissue, if Ani has it handy, just to go through the tables and just to confirm.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I can do it.
Good. Yeah, go ahead, Ani.
Ani, if you could go through those changes real quick so we can get a vote on them.
Yeah, sure. So for the 401A, we are keeping the first line as it is, keeping all the funds, the R6 funds. And then that is 1 to 17 is keep. And then on 18, we are moving to the Fidelity US Bond Index because that was the lowest fee charged, and then we are keeping on the neutral leverage. We're going to change it into the R6.
With the exception of number 20.
Correct. The exception is number 20, correct. And then on the Fidelity Advisor, because we can't keep that advisor stock, so it's 23 is changing into the Fidelity Global Commodity stock. And then for negative leverage, the next table 24 to 34, we are keeping the same funds as is, no change. And then the proposal to add American Target Funds to 2060, that is a new fund that will be added. And that's for 401A. And then on 457, number 1 to 11 stays the same. Number 12 goes to the new Fidelity Small Capital I that will be added. And then number 13 and number 16 will remain as is. And then number 14 and 15 will be changed to the N and the R6 class.
That's right.
Okay, and then number 17 will be keeping the same old fund, the Y share class. And on 19 to 24, we will be adding the new Fidelity stock funds versus the advisor classes. And then on 18, we will be adding the Voyager's A class.
Yep.
Basically, that whole table will be changed.
It really matches my notes. That's yours.
Okay. Back page.
Yeah, so I'll make a motion that we make these share class changes as was put out by Ani.
And talked about.
Yes.
Discussed. I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? Let's have a roll call.
Roll call, Director Rowe?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Please, Scott was about to get nicked for another night's lodging.
Okay, that's right.
This was a $300 meeting for me.
All right, so Jen Dias, discussion on this for the June 7th board meeting. Are there any announcements or reports? Nope. And I'll call this meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much,
everybody. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Scott.
A little over all that.